TRE, Talk Radio Europe. Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
Today on Life Stories, I've taken a drive along the Costa del Sol to Manilva, the town set slightly inland from the coast between Estepona and Gibraltar, and the place that is now home and business hub for my guest, Georgina Shaw. Georgina runs the marketing agency Shaw Marketing Services. Georgina, hello, and thank you very much for being my guest on Life Stories. Tell me a little bit about Shaw Marketing Services and the work you do here.
Well, we're a full-service PR and marketing agency. We've been running for nearly 10 years now here on the Costa del Sol. And what we really just try to do is help people to communicate more effectively. Marketing is really just communication and getting their message across. And so it's our job to try and find the right tools for that right customer and in keeping with their budget as well, which obviously is important.
Okay, and you say you're helping people here with their marketing. Are you talking Spanish people or expat people?
We have a mix of clients, predominantly expats, I think just because often us Brits and us expats stick together. We have a Spanish girl working with us, and we believe it's very important to be as integrated as possible with the Spanish community. So we've had Spanish clients in the past, and we also have sort of international chains as well that work with us. I think, you know, what is lovely here is you get to meet people from all walks of life and all parts of the world and get to work with them.
Is the concept of marketing here different from the concept that is prevalent in the UK? You talk about a full service mm-hmm. agency. That can mean very different things in London, for
yes.
example, than it does here, where there's a great reliance on Facebook mm-hmm. rather than a really beautiful website. There are anomalies here.
Yeah, I think there are. What I would say is the concept of marketing is the same wherever you are in the world. How you apply that concept, though, is different. And what I try to get my clients to understand here is it's a very small world. We are a village stretched along a long coastline, especially if you're talking to the non-Spanish speakers. And it is a very small place. So I always think that people should start with the basics, which is face-to-face and networking and being known. And I have always been a big believer in that, and that's how I've promoted my company. And then you build up from there. You know, good business card, a nice brand and a logo, definitely a website and Facebook and social media. And then some people go down the route of public relations, events organising, that kind of thing. Other people go down the route of advertising. But we have to be aware as well that here we're not in London, so the budgets aren't the same, and because the audience isn't the same either. So that's why we are always really, well, our strapline is intelligent marketing for the right price, because we know that everybody is very cost sensitive here.
Is it difficult dealing with two different cultures? So on the one hand, you're dealing with expat clients who probably understand the UK methodology, mm-hmm. and then you have the Spanish clients. Is there a disconnect between the two, or is it different trying to understand the two cultures and the two different approaches?
It's very, very, very different, and that's a great question actually, because I think a lot of people think it's the language that's the difficult bit, and yes, of course, you've got translation costs and things like that to do with the two languages, but it is much more of a cultural issue. And I realised I was getting nowhere with the Spanish press, for example, because it's all done on the phone and on WhatsApp rather than email. And so since my colleague has joined me, she's just an angel, and she just sits on the phone most of the day. That is how she gets the breakthrough, the communications. Whereas I never need to do that kind of thing with my clients. Well, you know, we meet occasionally, we talk occasionally, but mainly it's email. And so the communication methods are different. I think also the sales messages that they respond to are different. Perhaps, you know, we can be a bit more subtle on the English side, where you maybe can't, and the Spanish as much. So yes, it's definitely different, and depending on product to product and market, you need to look at it in different ways.
And is it getting busier for you? Are you beginning to get your name known in the area?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we've been here, as I say, it's going to be 10 years this year. I think it probably took a year for the penny to drop, a year of lots of networking, going to everything, getting my word out, my name out there. And then there was a really definite tipping point at the meetings when people would say, okay, so you've been here for a year, now tell me about yourself again. The ears were open, they were ready to hear. And I think that what's really funny is you meet people now that met me 10 years ago and they're like, what are you doing now? And I say, marketing. Oh, still marketing. In fact, I never went into real estate or I haven't changed into anything else. You know, I've just been doing marketing for 10 years and that's what I do. And I think that gives people a lot of confidence because if you've survived over that period, by hook or by crook, and we've all had to, you know, be quite creative to keep going, they know you're good at what you do and you're consistent and they trust you. And so we get a lot of people, you know, giving us referrals and talking highly of us because, you know, I think they think we're one of the good guys and we've been around for so long.
Yeah. And do you find, particularly dealing with the Spanish market, do you find you're having to educate the Spanish market in marketing methodologies to try to change their perception and their approach?
Well, we tried that a little bit, but I think it's very difficult to be the person that persuades someone to adopt a certain method because they're kind of against you from the beginning and they might go along with it, but ultimately they're not comfortable or they don't understand it. So we did it with a restaurant and we did PR for them and we got loads of great PR, but they were like, where's the people? They think of PR as pretty girls outside with flyers, literally dragging people into the restaurant. And so what we've kind of changed our philosophy a little bit now, and we look for clients that are in step with how we think, because if we are thinking alike, everybody's going to be happier, everybody's going to be easier. Of course, we lead them certain ways and we give them recommendations, but I am really now don't try to persuade people to go for something. If they don't want to do it, I prefer to say, then I'm not really for you, and you know, you're better off with people that you have a connection with, like that.
Georgina, I ask all of my guests to choose six pieces of music that best represent periods in their life stories. Music that evokes a strong memory, perhaps, or marks a significant moment in their lives. What would be your first piece, and why have you chosen this piece?
Well, I have to start with You've Got a Friend by Carole King. It's one of my favourite songs. My mum and dad were hugely into the musics of the 60s and 70s, and so I just remember growing up with these records playing. We actually used to do a sing-along where you used to sit around the kitchen table with the record covers with the words and sing the whole of the Carole King Tapestry album, as well as Don McLean and Billy Joel. And I've got very fond memories of that. And I also think that the message and the sound of this song is still as almost as current as it was. You know, I don't think it's aged. So I love this for very many reasons, and I hope that your listeners will too.
Got a friend. Georgina Shaw is my guest today, sharing her life story from her home in Manilva, just inland from the Costa del Sol between Estepona and Gibraltar. Georgina, before Carole King, you were talking about the way that you try to reassure clients, particularly if there's a disconnect, i.e. if they don't really understand the concept that you're offering, you will often advise them that perhaps you're not the agency for them. Are you beginning to see, after 10 years of being in business here, are you beginning to see clients coming to you because they've seen the success of some of their competitors, for example, and they're coming to you and saying, can you replicate this for me?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that, being around for a long time, and 10 years on the Costa del Sol is like 50 years in another place. You know, people come and go so often that it, you know, it doesn't sound a lot maybe to listeners in the UK, but here it's a long time. People see what you've done before, they've heard about you, and then they say, oh, could you do that for me? Also, there are people that are coming back that I worked with right at the very beginning doing something small, who then come back to me to do something again, which is really nice because it's lovely to have them back again. And also people do, they get inspired by their competitors and what their competitors are doing. And so if their competitors are doing something and they know we do that service, like the PR, for example, then they'll quite often come and say, hey, you know, so-and-so's doing that. Can you help me to do it too?
Yeah, so you've done, I noticed you've done some one of your clients is a major hotel on the Costa del Sol. So when you get a project like that, do you find other hotels sniffing around, for want of a better phrase, actually coming and saying, why, you know, what's happening with Kempinski?
Yeah, not really. People are normally quite discreet. Being with the Kempinski has been absolutely brilliant. And I think that we got that because we previously worked with the Marbella Club and Puente Romano. So there's obviously a confidence there that they know you've worked with a big brand. They liked what you did there. You have the contacts and you know what you're doing with it. And obviously there's an element of them saying, so what did they do and how did that work? I don't mind talking about the history of things because I think, you know, that's fair enough. But you obviously have to be discreet with your clients. And I am very, very careful not to ever take on any competing businesses because, you know, there's a lot of people that work with multiple players in the same field, but I find that difficult because there'll always be a case where you're using one idea for one of your clients and therefore not saying that idea to the other one. So I prefer to stay with one company per sector, or if not sector, then I won't do exactly the same for those clients.
Yeah.
So if I have two real estate clients, I'll do different things for them so that they don't get the conflict of interest there.
Yeah. Have you always been involved in marketing?
Not always. I started in events, actually. Well, I started as a teacher, as an English teacher, and that was mainly to travel and explore the world. But then my first sort of proper job, in inverted commas, was in the events industry. And I was organising seminars and conferences for the Institute of Mechanical Engineers, of all things, which was, you know, I'm very much on the art side. So it was quite a stretch to go into it, but really interesting and a great way to cut my teeth. Lots of challenges, lots of organisational issues. But I found, though, after a while that the events organising side in such a, you know, rigid way was not good for me because it's just head bending all the things. You know, I was looking at my calendar for the year ahead, seeing like in October one event per week and thinking, how on earth am I going to get there? So I was looking for a change in that, but I quite got into the idea of the marketing by then, because I was actually doing some marketing. And actually my parents were in advertising in the 80s in some of the biggest agencies in London. So I swore I would never do the same as them, and then did. Ended up falling into it completely by accident. Just because I met somebody at a wedding who said, do you do PR? Because if you don't, I think you should. And I could probably give you a job.
So you tried to resist the path that your parents took.
I did.
By disappearing off to Peru and China.
Yes.
Was that part of the English teaching? Was this just trying to find your feet and sort of think, look, I'm going to have a complete break. I want to go and teach English in these foreign countries. And
I just wanted to explore the world. I was not in a hurry to start work. So I took a gap year before my university. I worked in a hotel as a chambermaid, did a ski season, did loads of different things. Worked as a care worker, worked in TV because I wanted to be a presenter and an actress and all of that kind of stuff. And then in the end, I just thought, no, once I graduated, I just wanted to go off and see the world. And I just thought, I've got all the time to do the boring work stuff. So I got my TEFL course whilst I was at university in order to help me go abroad. And then I taught briefly in Spain for 3 weeks in a summer camp. And then, yeah, I did two long stints, one in China and then one in Peru. And in between came back and saved money for the next trip. But it was fascinating, and I would really say, and I don't want to kind of upset any parents out here, but to say to their kids, you know, go out and explore the world, because it just opens your mind. It makes you so much more resilient, so much more independent, and your abilities, I think, to problem solve when you've been in a country where nobody can understand you, you can't even read the writing, and you have to try to solve a problem, that really sets you up for life.
What's your second piece of music, Georgina, and why did you choose this piece?
Well, my second piece of music is Beautiful by Christina Aguilera, and I've chose it really for the message. I think that women particularly can have trouble with self-confidence, can feel smaller and can feel less worthy, and that's partly from outside forces, but I think it's a lot actually ourselves, what we do to ourselves. And I think that this song has a really great message and something which can pick you up and help you to kind of feel better, feel beautiful. And I think it's a really important message to share.
Spain.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
You're listening to Life Stories, and my guest this week is Georgina Shaw, Director of Shaw Marketing Services. And we're chatting in Georgina's home in Manilva on the Costa del Sol. Georgina, you spent some time in China and Peru. How long did you spend abroad in total?
I was 6 months in China and 9 months in Peru. So basically what I was doing is I did a term in each of the places as an English teacher, and then I took some time afterwards to travel around.
Okay, so this was just a delaying process to sort of delay the inevitable, where you have to sort of think, I have to choose a career.
Yes.
Did it help? I mean, did you come to any conclusions while you were abroad?
I didn't really. I mean, I think I don't think I was particularly trying to either. I was just wanting to live an experience which I knew would be much harder once I grew up and settled down. And I think, you know, a lot of the time people just talk about, you know, what was the outcome of that? But I just think, what was the experience? The experiences are so powerful and so life-changing, especially when, you know, for me, I was working in Peru particularly. I was working in a shanty town, and there was so much crime and so much fear, and so, I mean, it was a very difficult place to live. But to see these people being born into this life, I tell you, it gives you a perspective about your troubles and what's up with your life. And, you know, all I could think when I was there was, thank God that I was lucky enough to be born into the life I was in London and all the opportunities I had. You know, the kids there that I was trying to teach, they had two ways that they were going to go. They could join the church or they could join a gang. That was pretty much it. Both pretty extreme sides. So what I was trying to help with, and I was mainly teaching the tiny ones, but I asked the school whether I could also try to do some stuff with the older ones. And so I did a singing club with them because I thought, well, what is the most kind of engaging thing for a teenager? Pop music. And pop music is English. So if I can get them to think about the words of pop songs and sing them, then they might more engage with English. And I was trying to kind of give them a chance to see that the third route, as far as I saw it, was tourism. And if you were going to get into tourism, you had to speak English. So to give themselves a chance to, you know, learn the language and then get out of this hellhole, really, that they were living in.
Yeah, yeah. So after Peru, you then returned to the UK.
Yeah.
And that's when you got into event management.
Yes. But, I mean, it was a really, like, put your finger in the air and think of what to do. I remember my dad at the time saying, you know, I feel sorry for you because you have too many options. And it's true, I didn't do a degree that was in any way practical. I had loads of pie-in-the-sky ideas, like being an actress, which I immediately realised, thank God, was too hard, and I didn't have the talent either to do it. And so I was just, like, looking around. But in a way, it was quite good. At first, it was scary at first, but I was able to think, OK, what do I like doing? And I said, I like to throw parties. That was why I went into events.
Yeah.
So I organised, like, I interviewed and I applied for hundreds of jobs in events. Wasn't sure how I'd get my first job in there. But I did have, you know, I'd done quite a bit of charity fundraising and I'd done parties through there. So although they were parties for my friends, I was able to kind of put that on my CV and say, you know, this was an event for shelter, this was an event for whatever. And thank goodness, it was actually my travelling that did help me get that job, because the manager that employed me was fluent in Spanish and had travelled around South America. And I think the only reason I got the interview was because she saw that on my CV and thought, interesting, I'd like to talk to her. And I always knew, because I could talk a good game, if I got in at an interview, I was probably going to get the job. But getting in that first proper job is hard, you know, because people are like, why? Why would you come in?
Yeah, yeah. And what first brought you to Spain then?
Well, I was, again, my life seems to kind of just flow and I just jump on the opportunities. So I was looking for a new job. I've been with a lovely PR agency for a couple of years, learned a lot, but I wanted to get to the next stage in the career ladder. And I was finding it very difficult to get that movement up from account executive to account manager. At the time, I met up with a friend and she was about to travel and she said, why aren't you travelling, George? You should be doing this. You know, you broke up with your boyfriend, you're looking for a new job, why don't you go? And I thought, interesting, I hadn't kind of thought about doing that again, because I'd kind of put the travel in my young and free part of my life. But I thought, well, why not? And I came back that very night after a few wines and put my CV onto a recruitment website in Spain and one in New York. Went to bed woke up with a hangover, thinking nothing more of it. And amazingly, about a month later, the recruitment company rang me saying, are you still looking to relocate to Spain? And thankfully, I didn't say wrong number and put it down and said yes. And they offered me my dream job. I was a lowly account executive and they offered me a communication manager role. And I honestly thought they'd got the wrong person. I just thought, this can't be true. But when I spoke to the director of the company, I actually saw why I could bring value to the role, because I spoke Spanish and English, because I was in a PR company with a lot of different facets. It was a small company, so I was able to learn kind of a bit of everything. And within a month, I was here.
On the Costa del Sol?
On the Costa del Sol, in Marbella.
Time for your third piece, before we go into that anymore, Georgina. Time for your third piece of music. And what did you choose this time?
Well, I thought I would change it up a little bit. It's been kind of soulful and slow. So I love dancing. Just love it, love it, love it. And this song, which is It's Raining Men by the Weather Girls, is just reminds me of dancing at my university with my girlfriends. And every time I hear it, it just brings a huge smile to my face and makes me want to go and run on the dance floor. So Raining Men by the Weather Girls.
I'm at the home and business hub of Georgina Shaw, founder and director of Shaw Marketing Services. Before the Weather Girls, Georgina, you were talking about the what on the face of it was a job offer of a lifetime, mm-hmm. Working for a PR agency down here on the Costa del Sol. How long did it take you to decide to take the job? And what was it like when you first got here? Was it everything that it was made out to be?
Yeah, I found it really hard to make the decision to come here, actually, because I going to Peru and China, whilst they were scary things to do, I always knew they were short term, so I could be brave for a bit. And that's kind of how I thought it. Adventurous, good, I can't be scared. Whereas to move somewhere, and I thought, if this works, this is forever, potentially. That was quite hard, because I liked my life in London. And I came here for the weekend, because I'd never even been to the Costa del Sol before. And I was just sat in the Chiringuito trying to draw up a list of pros and cons. And it just doesn't work, because they're not the same thing in any, you know, it's like, you know, apples and pears. They're just, you can't compare them. And so I was just umming and ahhing. And it was actually my mum that said, okay, think of it a different way. How would you feel if you didn't take it? And I thought that was a brilliant piece of advice, because I suddenly realised that if I didn't take it, I could be regretting that forever and I could always go back. And so I actually set it up that my lovely PR agency that I'd been with before said, we don't want to lose you, but if you feel you have to go, go, and the job will be here for you if you want to come back, which was wonderful. So I had an exit plan. I also paid my rent on my flat for an extra month just in case I hated it and wanted to come back. Because I think I felt like it was just a hugely drastic thing, because I made the decision and I was out here working within a month. So it was so quick. But it was good then, because I'd sort of thought, okay, it's what if I don't? I want to try it. I can always come back. And I thought, from a career point of view, at the very least, you know, I would have got over that hump that I was struggling to get over, which was, you know, up a level, because I was going up three levels. So I could, you know, would be in a better position when I came back. So once I'd made that decision and I arrived, the first few days were just so strange. You know, I think you asked me, was it what it had been made out to be? And I think I just didn't really have any expectations of it. I just thought, this is going to be an experience. So I didn't have anything to feel disappointed about. I wasn't one of those people who came for the dream, you know, which I see people time and time again be devastated because the dream isn't real. Of course it's not real. It's a dream, you know? We always say same beep, different skies. And that's what I was expecting. So it was more just the nerves of starting a new job, the nerves of being in a new place. I spent a lot of time pacing up and down the Paseo in Marbella, just kind of... But once I got started, it was great. And my very first day, I went to the closing party of Nikki Beach, because that was the principal client of my marketing agency. And I stood there and looked around and was like, little Georgina Shaw, communications manager of this company in Nikki Beach, Marbella. Weird. But I think I was kind of mature enough from all of the experience I'd had to not let all of that go to my head. So I took a grotty apartment in the middle of Marbella. I shared a flat with someone. So I had a very different kind of first few months there than most people, I think. But I think it was good because it gave me that grounding.
But did it not make you feel disconnected from the rest of Spain, if you like, because Marbella and Nikki Beach and many of the other beach clubs along there are in their own bubble that are not Spanish. A bit of Spanish is spoken, but they're not Spanish. They are a sort of a microcosm of something else that exists somewhere else.
Yeah.
Was that not a worry to you, that you were existing or in danger of existing in a slightly surreal environment?
There's always that danger. And a lot of people do fall into that, especially working in the kind of stuff that I work in. And at that time, all these luxury, you know, products. But that's why I took this apartment share on Ricardo Soriano in Marbella, which is very, very Spanish, actually, that main road. We were one of the few non-Spanish people living there. And so I felt very connected with that, and I'm the kind of person who'd rather choose a spit and sawdust tapas place than something glitzy. So I was always going to the more Spanishy parts of town, and so although I didn't really know very many Spanish people, I felt like I was getting a rounded experience of the area.
Was there a moment when you realised that actually, I think I will stay here and I'll let the flat in London go and I won't be going back?
Yeah, and it happened surprisingly quickly, actually, because I've sort of, as I say, travelled with China and Peru, but I also went to university in Hull and I've, you know, travelled around a bit, and I never really felt I found my place. I don't know why. I never really felt that I totally fitted somewhere. And that sounds like, I wasn't an outcast at all, but I just didn't kind of feel in my place. Whereas when I moved here, it was within the first week or so, I thought, do you know, this place is just great. It's so open and interesting and crazy and different people with open minds and so many opportunities. And so I think it was really within, if not the first week, certainly the first 2 weeks, because I said, right, not paying another month's rent, I'm here. And I just felt I'd found my place for all its pros and cons.
Your fourth piece of music, Georgina, what piece did you choose this time and why this one?
I think I was thinking about dance music again because I've gone dancey again. And this one is I Like to Move It by Reel to Reel. And 90s dance music for me was just, you know, a kind of era of my life where I was just going clubbing all the time, too young really, but having an absolute whale of a time, getting dressed up in very silly, bright coloured clothing and just letting it all kind of hang out there really, and being in London and just having a real blast. And I think I was really happy to see that this track was then used on Madagascar lately. So it's back in the charts and my little boy bops along to it as well. And I think it's one of those songs that just has such a catchy bass line and beat that even if you're feeling a bit grumpy, you can't help but kind of tap your feet along to it. So I thought I just wanted to hear that one again.
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I love how all girls are move them body. And when you move your body, you wanna move it nice and sweet and sexy. Alright, woman, you're cute. How you doing now? Bitch, you're not too funny. You want me to pass, mother? Woman, you're cute. How you doing now? Bitch, you're not too funny. You want me to pass, mother? Woman, physically fit. Physically fit. Physically, physically, physically. Woman, physically fit. Physically fit. Physically, physically, physically. Woman, you're nice, sweet, fantastic. Bitch, you're funny, you should not have been tight. And woman, you're nice. I enjoy the thing. Reach up on the ocean at a bit tight. And woman, you're nice, sweet, fantastic. Reach up on the ocean at a bit tight. And come on, you're nice, sweet, I enjoy the thing. Reach up on the ocean at a bit tight. And come on.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
At the Oasis Dental Clinic, we know life is better with great teeth. We also know that so many people are living a life of quiet desperation because of their teeth. They're embarrassed or they are in pain, usually because they're afraid to seek help or simply don't know what their options are. But it doesn't have to be that way. We will listen to you and can provide professional, caring solutions to allow you to get that smile you've always wanted and have great dental health. Visit us at oasisdentalmarbella.com. We want you to have confidence in your smile.
TRE.
We let our programmes do the talking.
Life Stories with Ian Rutter.
Georgina Shaw arrived in Spain in 2007 following her appointment as communications director of a top marketing and PR agency in Marbella, and subsequently set up her own marketing company in response to the crisis. We're chatting in Georgina's home and business hub in Manilva on the Costa del Sol. Now, we touched on it there, Georgina. So you were working for the PR agency in Marbella. What happened? Because it hit a bit of a wall because of the crisis.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you had to make some decisions.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I arrived basically as everything crashed. I mean, I kind of joke, but I didn't know the good old days. And it was quite scary because I'd obviously made this move. I'd found that, yes, this is what I wanted to do. And suddenly it became painfully obvious, although the owner of the company was really trying hard to keep on a positive front, that clients were just dropping like flies. And, you know, they represented quite a lot of property development and kind of golf developments and things like that. They were one of the first to be hit. And so people were just, it was just going and going and going. And she was struggling to pay us. The contract we were promised didn't come. And I understand all of that because it's so difficult. And it must have been like staring off a precipice for her. And so I saw quite quickly that this was not going to be a long-term thing. And in fact, it was 6 months after I arrived that she admitted that there wasn't a job for me anymore. And then I had to decide what to do. And I really didn't know, because I was loving my life here. I'd met my partner. I met him very early and fallen head over heels in love and did not want to leave him behind. But I really didn't know what it held for me. And I thought, well, if this very successful agency is failing, how can I possibly get another job? No one is going to be hiring right now. And actually, it was my partner who said, I think you could do this yourself. You're good. You know what you're doing. He's got some faith in me now. That's nice. And I was thinking, have I though? Can I really do this? You know, that same sort of feeling that I was standing in Nikki Beach going, little me, how did this happen? Was then looking to set up my own business and thinking, I don't know. And I really had never had any aspirations to do it.
Particularly in an industry that you had witnessed firsthand go down the toilet.
Exactly.
And you sort of think, well, actually, all I'm doing is moving and doing the same thing when there is no market.
Yeah. But actually, I saw a market when I was that short 6 months, but I was helping her with client meetings and things. And I saw that there were a lot of people that she had to turn away because they didn't have her minimum fee. Mm. And I thought, I could look after those people. They need more help than the big guys. And because I didn't have any sort of pretensions to grandeur or anything, I thought, well, you know, if I work from home and I keep everything low, then there's no reason why I can't keep my costs down, therefore my price is low to the people. And so that's where we saw our niche was those people who still needed to market but didn't have so much money. And I was lucky enough, I mean, very lucky, that my boyfriend's job came with a free apartment and car. So we had no overheads, and his boss actually said, well, actually, I need someone to copyright for me, so I could promise you €500 a month. So I thought, well, okay, with €500 a month, I can live, especially with no real overheads. And so that's where we started, and we begged, borrowed, and stole for the beginning bit.
And there is an old adage that a company markets their way out of a recession.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find that happened here? But was there an appetite for the sort of services you offered, where people feel we need to do something to keep our head above water?
There were different reactions to the crisis. There was lots of people that just shut their doors and went to the next big shiny thing. So hundreds of real estate agencies closed their doors and went to Dubai. Then other people just hunkered down and just kind of got rid of staff, got rid of offices, and just kind of went into kind of survival mode. Those weren't the people that were marketing. But there were other people that wanted more than just survival, saw that people were still buying things, there were still people around. These are the non-real estate related people. Right. And those were the ones that came to me and said, listen, I haven't got very much money, but I know I need marketing, can you help? And the money that we were being given in the early days was silly. I mean, people were coming to us with like €100. What can you do with €100? But because we were brand new and I didn't have very many overheads, and I knew I needed to prove myself and prove to myself as well that I could do it, we did. We accepted a lot of these little things. We helped restaurants in exchange for meals. You know, we just really sort of tried, as well as to make money, to do a bit of community service and help people to get themselves out of a really bad situation. And so, yeah, it was an interesting few years there. And I did diversify a little bit. I did some English teaching, actually, during that time, just to kind of keep the monies coming in. I was writing reviews for a travel site for a bit, because I think you do need several hats on here to be successful. You need to be able to be flexible and change and go where the market goes. So I always kept the marketing, and that was always my main thing. But I also wasn't too proud to say I can do whatever I need to do. And I still feel like that today.
Your fifth piece of music, Georgina, what did you choose this time, and why this particular piece of music?
So I'm going to slow things down a little bit now. We've had my dance music era taking us through university and to London in the 90s. And now it's Loving You by Minnie Riperton, which I just think is one of the most beautiful, beautiful songs. And if you don't know it, you will when they go, la, 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 la. Everybody knows that bit, right? And I remember I used to listen to that when I was cleaning rooms in the hotel that I was working in and doing my ski season back in my gap year. And the bathrooms of hotels have the most wonderful acoustics. And so I used to sing away. God knows if somebody used to walk in on me. And this is one of my favourite songs to sing along to. And I think it's got a beautiful, beautiful words, beautiful soul. And then when my little boy was young, I used to sing to him a lot if I couldn't get him to sleep. So once I'd run through all the sort of nursery rhymes and kiddie songs I could think of, this was often one that I used to sing to him. So it reminds me of two very interesting and important stages of my life, my ski season and when my baby was young. And I love the song.
Georgina Shaw is my guest today, sharing her life story from her home in Manilva on the Costa del Sol. Georgina is the founder and director of Shaw Marketing Services. You took the brave step of setting up a business in the middle of a five-year recession.
At the beginning of a five-year recession.
At the beginning of a five-year recession, which is no mean feat. And you touched on the fact that you were prepared to do, I mean, your overheads were low, so you were prepared to do any work that came along.
Yeah.
Do you find, or have you found since being here, that Spain has unexpectedly offered you opportunities?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that opportunities are always there to be had if you look for them. You know, I think that I'm a real believer in positive mental attitude. Because of the closing of the other agency, I saw the opportunity for looking after the lower end of the market. And so I did take that opportunity and ran with it. And I think that all along, I've found that people here are really kind and welcoming, actually. There's a lot of bad people around, of course there are, and there are a lot of cowboys, and there always will be. But actually, once you get into the good people on the Costa del Sol, there are people that will just bend over backwards to help you. And I think I was lucky in a way. I mean, that we had some difficult times, of course we did, but we tended to have, like, we would lose one client and almost immediately gain another. And we've never advertised. We have never spent a single penny on advertising our business. It's just been getting out there, making our reputation, being known, being online and having a presence. So I think, you know, from that point of view, we've been incredibly lucky.
Was there ever a moment when you thought, actually, this is too hard and I might be better off going back to the UK?
I never wanted to go back to the UK. I never had a day when I wanted to go back to the UK. I've had days where I thought, what are we doing with the business? And so I've always thought, you know, what would we do if this didn't work? You know, I'm not naive enough to think that all businesses succeed. They don't, you know. And so what I've always tried to do is try to look at different opportunities. So when I was finding it hard to get clients for the marketing because I saw they didn't have the budget, I looked to training, because teaching is a real passion of mine. And I thought, well, if I can train people how to do it themselves rather than have to take 50 euros from them to try and do some marketing, I can give them the skills for that money, help them to go away themselves, and then hopefully that training will then generate them income. And then when they're ready and they have more money in the bank, they can come back to me for services. But that's an example of kind of finding an opportunity in a problem. I will always look for alternatives, but I also look to Gibraltar. Now we're in Manilva, we were in Marbella for a long time. That I think, you know, there's jobs out there in Gibraltar particularly. And so if this has, for some reason, doesn't have a future, I think it does now. I'm very confident, actually, for the future now. But I always say there's always other opportunities out there.
Yeah. Well, have you always been very disciplined since founding the business? Have you been... Your partner, obviously, has the business background. Mm. So have you been rigid about having a business plan and a cash flow forecast, or have you rather winged it?
We've quite winged it, yes. I'm disciplined in the sense of working hours and really sticking to what I have to do and working towards my objectives. But although I'm a planner, but I'm quite a short-term planner for our business, just because it's just taken so many turns and twists and everything that I kind of think, well, if I did a year plan, within a month, it would be completely obsolete. So what I plan for really is to how to be visible, how to be out there, how to making sure that I'm constantly stuffing the pipe, as we say, you know, making sure that potential inquiries come in. And that's what I plan for. And I also plan for saving money, because there's no reason why it couldn't happen again that it goes low. But it's just planning for that, I think, gives you a lot of confidence moving forward.
Yeah. So you've talked about the future, you've touched on the future, saying it's looking positive. Mm. Briefly, what do you put your success down to?
I think the first secret of our success really was keeping our overheads low, and still is. And I actually thank being a business of the crisis for that, because there was no choice on that when we set up. And, you know, we always shied away from getting an office outside our home. So we're sat here today in our home office. It's a lot bigger than it was. It's not working around the kitchen table anymore. It's a custom-built office. But we don't have to pay rent on it. And just that alone gives us so much flexibility and freedom to, you know, enjoy our low time, which is summer and Christmas, and just enjoy it working, but slower. And we can do that because we don't have the overheads. So I think the number one, that is it, and not running before you can walk, keeping everything, I hate this phrase, but keeping it real, you know, just to say things can change all the time, just plan for it to be difficult again. So I think that's one thing. But the flip side of that, which is sounds kind of opposite, but I think is why people like to do business with us, is we're very positive people. You know, we stay positive and we look at the benefits, we look at the possibilities. We love the Costa del Sol. So even in the face of lots of bureaucratic nightmares and all the things that we all know and hate about the Costa del Sol, we always stay positive and say, this is the life that we want. So what do we have to do to stay in the life that we want? And we keep that, we have that positivity for ourselves, but also for our clients. And I think the third one will probably be embracing where you are, embracing both cultures, and just really enjoy and live everything brilliant about this place.
Okay. And if somebody wants to find out more about Shore Marketing Services, where can they find you?
The best thing is to find us online, www.shoremarketingservices.com. You can find us on Facebook as well. And come down to a networking meeting and I'll probably be there.
Excellent. Okay. Your final piece of music.
Yes.
What would you choose this time?
Well, this is all about my positivity, I think. This is Defying Gravity by Idina Menzel. I love this. I love musical theatre with a passion, my theatre roots. And when I went to see this, I just fell in love with the song and also the show. But actually, when I was really wondering what to do with the company and really finding things hard, if I was about to go into a difficult meeting, I would put this on. And it just gives me a huge boost because it just says, no one's going to hold me down. No one's going to beat me. I can do it with that wonderful Broadway style.
Perfect. Georgina Shaw, thank you so much for being my guest and for sharing your life story. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mobile and on air. TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain.